You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 3 November. We've got local new vehicle sales data, 2:30 this afternoon. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Nick Kunze, Sunline Private Wealth. Aspen gets 25 million euros. Vodacom gets a giant trading update. And Mag7, what stood out for him? There's a ton there, but maybe there's a single standout. We're going to be talking with Coface Group Africa economist. Power challenges still facing South Africa. And then AT20, Andrew Fulton. Gambling. Who's gambling? Where's the money coming from? And what are the actual numbers? There's a lot bandied around. Let's try to get some real numbers out there. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. South Korea eyes 30 billion reserve target by 2029. But still needs another 3 years to recover losses from those July 2021 unrest. Bloomberg, gold dips after China ends some tax incentives. They've ended a tax rebate for some retailers, a change that could subdue demand in the world's largest precious metal market. Morning markets, US was green on Friday, S&P up a quarter of a percent, and the NASDAQ half a percent higher. The East is mixed. We've got Sydney up 0.2%, Tokyo is closed for Cultural Day, Hong Kong is 0.4% higher, but Tencent is almost a full percent weaker. Commodities mixed, gold futures green, $4,019, Brent green, $6,502, PGMs red with platinum, $1,590, palladium, $1,450. The Rand is 17.32, Bitcoin 108,300, and top 40 opening call slightly green, 100 points, 0.1% higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Nick Kunze from Sunlam Private Wealth. Nick, Friday, Vodacom trading update didn't tell us a heck of a lot, but gave us a giant number. HEPS 40 to 45% higher. There were some one-offs in the previous period, which added some, which took out some 55 cents. But still, I have to say, a better update than I would have thought, notwithstanding maybe the market has been expecting it, because telcos haven't had a bad year. Although, as I zoom out on the Vodacom chart, they're not quite doing perhaps as well, but it has been a strong update for them.
Yeah, morning, Simon. Yeah, these telcos obviously haven't been front and center of a sort of the growth story. I mean, everyone's been focusing, certainly from an offshore point of view, everything's about the AI story. And they've sort of lagged a little bit, and everyone's trying to figure out, you know, have they gone X growth or not. But looking at those Vodacom numbers, I think they would certainly, maybe they would calm a few nerves. They were very decent. I mean, if you actually, you talk about zooming out on your chart, I mean, year to date up 37%. Yeah. So pretty decent. I like the story as well that, you know, their customer grace is, again, their financial customer grace is growing quite nicely. Mm. And the revenue for the quarter, I mean, up 10% for the quarter. So it wasn't sort of a long sort of a dated growth. It was, it's the last couple of months is certainly a bit of acceleration, which is very encouraging. And also, the, as you said, a little bit of one-offs relating to that was to the DRC, Ethiopia, as well, there's a little bit of one-offs, but overall, you know, I think a solid set of numbers, and you know, not overly expensive if you're looking for a little bit of diversification.
Yeah, and short on, I mean, the Vodacom's a good number. It's just, of course, maybe relative to MTN, who's, I don't know, almost 100 up. Aspen, they lost their contract at their sterile facility. They've now announced that they're going to get a 25 million euro payment. That's about half, what, about 500 million ZAR. And to me, perhaps the story's more about the fact that this would suggest that this is then not failure on Aspen's part. It is more the client who's turned around and said, we don't want or need any more, but still a tricky stock in a tough space.
Yeah, that is a tricky one. Yeah, and I get your point. You know, it's not, we have a habit of, you know, Aspen's sort of I guess their board hasn't sort of covered themselves in glory over the years in regards to sort of giving advice with what's going with shareholders. But, you know, they were caught a little bit sort of wrong-footed, I guess, on this one. Mm-hmm. But for me, you know, it's not a massive number. It's quite small on the scheme of things. And if you're looking to invest into Aspen, you know, they've got to get this manufacturing up and running. I mean, that is the key reason to invest in Aspen, and you've got to get some more. I mean, if you bear in mind that stock dropped, what, 20-odd% when the news broke, it's only bounced back 3, so not out the woods just yet. A little bit of glimmer of hope, I think, Simon, is that pharmaceutical shares tend to be quite defensive. We don't have too many on the JSE that might offer them a little bit of support if we head into a bit of a tricky period in the next year or so. But again, I'd say that they've got to get this manufacturing running, and sooner rather than later.
And get utilization numbers up. A quick last one. We've had all the big sort of hyperscalers, Mag 7s, tech stocks. I'm not even sure what we call them anymore. Results out last week. A lot to stand out. What would you point to and say, wowza, either good or bad in all those numbers coming through?
I think, well, the wowza is the free cash flow from these businesses is just hard to get your head around. I mean, hundreds of billions, if you look at it across the board, of all of them combined, and this is for the quarter, this is real currency. We're talking dollars, So the amount of cash these big guys are generating still doesn't seem to be slowing down. So from that respect, there were some real standouts. I think Alphabet, for me, was a real standout number. Their results were excellent. Amazon, with their web services division, also solid growth, and obviously not so volatile, not as high beta as the others. But I guess a word of warning for me, Facebook, Meta, coming out and announcing, you know, 100-odd billion of capex next year, and tapping into a potential $20 billion bond issue. For me, everything's been funded on the free cash flow and operating cash that's coming in. The minute someone says, "Well, actually, we want to start raising debt," I get concerns, and I wonder if this is not the start of something. So just just a warning sign there. Just be careful. When more of these – we had Oracle, I think, a couple of weeks ago, Simon, also talking about a bond issue. So any more of these coming out, just a word of caution out there. But for now, the party keeps on going, I guess.
Yeah, it is. And I take a point. That stood out for me. It's one thing when you're growing out of cash flow. It's another when it's debt. But we'll see how it plays. But, that was a red flag. Nick Kunze, Sanlam Private Wealth. Always appreciate the early morning. Our poll today, going back to that Aspen story. Is it an investment on your watch list? Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation-beating returns. Let your money keep working with Stanlib Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Roni Chanduri, economist for Africa at the Coface Group. Roni, appreciate the time. A recent report you put out had a really stark stat for South Africa. Per capita GDP in 2025 is below the 2007 levels. It really is a country, an economy that has failed to live up to the expectations of 20 years ago.
Yes. When South Africa joined the BRICS, like in 2010, you know, there were hopes that this country would continue to expand at a fast pace. And really, like, it was, you know, with India, China, Russia, it was supposed to be one of these beacons, right, of the emerging world. So basically, there are many reasons behind it. But as you said in the report that I wrote, I was looking to find kind of the fundamental reasons that could explain why South Africa has underperformed, because it has basically underperformed every other emerging economy. And so my idea was to say, well, obviously, there are elements linked to the global economic cycles because South Africa is a very open economy, very open to trade, and also very well integrated into financial networks. So obviously, it suffered a lot from the great financial crisis. But all the other emerging economies also went through similar crises, right? So this meant that basically there was something in the engines of South African growth that have been failing to work, and as you said, like for around two decades. And so what I found out is that, in my opinion, the two main constraints to what we economists call the growth potential of a country in South Africa is, on the one hand, the energy system. I mean, this is, I think, no surprise, because South Africans, they have lived through the energy crisis for two decades, and it peaked in the past 3 years. And on the other hand, the labor market, which is also not a surprise because you know the unemployment rate in South Africa, you know the issues that there are for South Africans and specifically some South Africans to find jobs. But the reason why I see this as the main constraint is because these, like energy and labor, these are foundations of economic activity and of human society, basically, as it is now. And so that is why when these drivers are non-functional, not only does it obviously limit your growth potential, but it also makes other types of policymaking that you would like kind of use to ignite growth less effective because it's the foundations, right? And so if the foundations are not functional, you can try, you know, to adopt an expansionary fiscal policy. You can try to adjust your monetary policy to the fluctuations, you know, of the economic cycle. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, they are less effective because, you know, you don't have enough energy in the economy and in the society. And, you know, the economy is not creating enough jobs. So there is a cap to the income of South African households and also by extension, also for South African corporates, because they're not, some corporates are not being able to fill their vacancies correctly because of these distortions.
You mentioned the energy and it's been a really rough couple of decades. Load shedding in of itself has largely gone, but I mean, Eskom still has challenges. None the least is massive debt, I appreciate, backed by the government. But there's also the risk that if we were to suddenly start growing at, I don't know, 3%, 4%, 5%, we would run into energy constraints. So in a sense, it's gone, but perhaps investors are not completely convinced.
So load shedding, we can't say that it exactly ended because officially it's still there. Sure. I mean, they can still implement load shedding. But at least let's say that for now, the situation has stabilized. Mm. But I agree with you that this doesn't mean that, you know, the constraints on the energy sector in South Africa are gone. And that is why, you know, one of the most important aspects for policymaking, I think, in the years to come is to be able to modernize the energy system.
Yeah.
Because obviously what happened, like we don't have that much time, but without going into all of the intricacies, basically what happened is that the capital, on the one hand, the capital expenditure was insufficient considering just the structure of electricity supply, which is that basically a vast majority of electricity supply is from old coal-fired power stations. And so you need to replace those if you want to sustain, you know, your energy supply into the longer term. So for now, it's just been band-aided. So obviously there needs to be a step up in capital expenditure. There is more capex that is planned by Eskom. And also obviously there is large government support on that side. But it's not only the question of capital expenditure because there are also issues in price regulation and that stem from 2008. And you can see that even for this year, ultimately somewhere between 6% to 8% perhaps of electricity tariffs increase. And so that shows that obviously with price increases like this, you're always placing a constraint on demand, especially from consumers who can also turn to alternative sources of generation. And so in itself, you still have an issue to solve on revenue, right? Because the entire issue is that, yes, you have to ensure supply in order to meet future demand, but you also have to make sure that Eskom is generating enough revenue to invest, but also to be able to be into a better financial position. So Eskom's financial position has improved, but that's mainly thanks to the government support. So now there needs to be a system that enables Eskom to have a stable stream of revenue so that they can invest into the energy structure and indeed modernize it and ensure that if growth ignites, then, you know, the increase in electricity demand does not turn into too much pressure on the system and then it breaks down again, right?
And that's partly it. I mean, Eskom's giving us the base load. I've got the luxury of solar and then I can dip in as I need it. It's much more complex for them. As a country, I mean, we have some of the assets. We've got a diverse industrial base, a strong financial sector, good institutions, coalition government. That all said, the road to decent growth, and to me, decent growth has to be a minimum of 3%. It's going to be slow regardless, even if we get it right.
Yes, it's going to be slow regardless. See, the thing is that, you know, the issues that you have here on the energy system and on the labor market, these long-term kind of trends and the deterioration has been going on for at least two decades, but it's perhaps even more for the energy system. It's perhaps even three decades because it started well in advance. I mean, already in 1998, there were signals that the system was under pressure, right? So it's been a very, very long time. So obviously, if you want to reignite growth, long-term growth, it's going to take some time. Like you cannot expect fast results because once again, these are constraints on the fundamentals of the economy, right? So it will take time. It will also take precise policymaking because I firmly believe that, you know, reforms that target the energy system, that target also the transport networks, that also social policies that target the lower levels of income relative to the population. Those are kind of the reforms that can add up and reignite growth.
We'll leave it there. So Roni Shanduri, he's economist for Africa, the Coface Group. Appreciate the time. Give you money, smoother returns for Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Trading now with Andrew Fulton, he's director at 8020. Andrew, appreciate the early morning gambling by South Africans. A lot of media reports out there. I want to try and sort of dig through it and get to some actual hard data, which is exactly what you folks at 8020 do. My first question, do we have any sense of how many South Africans are gambling and income levels of these people who are gambling?
Yeah, thanks for having us on the show. Yeah, we've got a lot of data on that, so hope we can help. What we're finding, the Roots data came out recently. It's a survey of 30,000 people that comes out every 3 years. Mm-hmm. And what they're finding is about 42% of South Africans make monthly gambling payments.
Wow.
So up there with monthly insurance premiums or school fees. So, you know, getting close to half of South Africans engaged in gambling, 42% of them getting monthly payments.
And income levels, I mean, I think there's a perception that it is lower income, but I'm not sure that's necessarily true.
It isn't entirely true. I mean, if you look at the over index, so where you've got a higher proportion than you would expect, it certainly is at the lower incomes, but the wealthy are also engaged in gambling to a large extent, as are highly educated versus poorly educated individuals. The one thing that is for sure, though, is that it is a very male-dominated activity. It's not something that women are as keen on doing as the men are.
There's a number of 1.5 trillion rand that gets bandied around. That, of course, is total spend. There are winnings coming back. Do we have a sense of what the actual spend has been on gambling?
Yeah, it's interesting. So the 1.5 trillion that goes through the system is what's wagered. But obviously, you wager 100 rand, you get back maybe 90, maybe 80, maybe 110, who knows? So that's kind of a bit of a fictional number. But about 80 billion is what the gambling industry makes. So that's, you know, that's the size of the budget for the Western Cape. It's you know, it's what Pick and Pay makes in about 6 months. You know, it's a significant amount of money. It really is quite high.
And this is predominantly online. I mean, I remember back in the days when, you know, there was no gambling in South Africa. Post 94, of course, it's come in. There are land-based casinos. But I imagine most of this explosion and growth has been in the online environment.
It is. About 70% of that revenue is now online, and particularly sports betting. That's the one that's really taken off. So you're correct. I mean, you used to have to go somewhere to gamble, and that's part of the problem when people are saying it needs a bit more control, is you used to have to go to a place, you know, withdraw money and go through a bit of a friction-filled process in order to gamble. Now you pull out your cell phone, you're sitting there with your family, and you're betting on the next Arsenal match.
Yeah, and as you say, you're doing it from your lounge, absolutely, or the taxi, or wherever the case may be. Do we have a sense, are people looking at gambling as entertainment, or is this an attempt to, you know, get some income to help the family budget?
Well, there's a couple things, and that's why it's exploded. I mean, the one thing is it is entertainment, and people look at that expenditure as entertainment. So, you know, they could go see a movie, they could read a magazine, they could stream something online. They're choosing to entertain themselves with something that might have a payout. But also what we're noticing is there's that belief that you're actually going to make money, and people are making money. You look out there are winners. You know, Hollywood Bets has got an ad showing how many millionaires they make in a given period of time. So yeah, people do see it, you know, in this high inflation environment we've come through with flat salaries as a side hustle. In fact, a lot of these surveys that we use to guide our clients on industries, they see that people are saying gambling is an alternative source of income. Which is an amazing statement.
Absolutely. I mean, and I'm trying to think of if there's some flip side, some benefits to it. That 80 billion, I mean, spend we're seeing. Are we seeing job creation? Is it? If it's online, I imagine it's probably not that job intensive at all.
That's true. I mean, the gambling industry will speak to, you know, 33,000 direct and 144,000 indirect jobs made, but that's generally in the casinos. There's 6 billion in taxes and levies, but once again, you know, there's very little job creation in the online space. Certain companies like Betway are, you know, they list on the New York Stock Exchange, so they're repatriating those funds overseas. So it is hard to make the argument that sports betting is really increasing jobs and helping South Africans.
Yeah, as a benefit to our country and our community. Andrew Fulton, Director 8020, appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. We were chatting with Skulk Low on Friday at PSG Old Oak. We're talking the Dis-Chem numbers. Well, we spoke around Dis-Chem results and compared them to the previous week's clicks. We asked you, which retailer do you prefer? It was pretty much a four-way split, although Dis-Chem did edge it as the preferred. The rest said clicks all the way, bit of both or neither for you. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Redefine results.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.